All right. Good morning, everybody. Today is Monday, August 7th, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Monday, everyone. It is an overcast 63 degrees and still kind of sunny here in upstate New York. So where do we leave off on? I think it was Thursday. We titled the show Faulty CO2 Models, Gates, Ionosphere, HARP, and DNA Surprise. We looked at a couple days of how this whole climate change bullshit, they are, I'm hearing a cat crying out the back door. I think the cats are looking for me upstairs. They are drumming that drum, saying that CO2 is the cause of all of our climate change. And I'm saying, no, it isn't. CO2 is a way for them to make millions and millions of dollars from a resource that is required for life on Earth, specifically for plants that we eat. And they found ways now. I saw Bill Gates as well as, I remember the name of that other company, but it utilized solar power out on the ocean to pull CO2 out of the atmosphere and then make carbon nanotubes that they can weave into a wool at a cost of $660 a ton and then turn around and sell it for anywhere between $100,000 and $400,000 a ton. So don't let them fool you, because methane is a much worse greenhouse gas than CO2. And I don't think it's us, you know, hiccuping or driving our cars or whatever else they're trying to blame it on that's causing this. We started to look at some of the climate change that occurs in the upper atmosphere and some of this ionospheric heating that they're doing with HARP in that super secret paper I found. They required a password to get into. But also, there was an Australian climate scientist who had 6 degrees in mathematics that Drew Lamb had posted the story on, that blew the doors off of the climate change model because he said that they were doing the numbers all wrong. And he showed that when he manipulated the equations and fixed the mistakes that they were making, it ends up it's not carbon dioxide. It potentially is. Oh, the solar cycle. We had said that originally. Back just a few years ago, they had been talking about how we were moving into an ice age, and it all had to do with the solar cycle. And they really, that was all of your big NOAA scientists and NASA and whatever. They'd all been talking about that, and then came COP21, bing, all of a sudden, they were all told that they could make bazillions and crying that CO2, and good old Billy Gates at that TED Talk, CO2 was the culprit, and we had to bring that number down to zero. Well, don't think he has your best interest at heart, because he's got an investment that he is about to make bazillions on as well, sucking CO2 out of the atmosphere. So at the end of the show, we had started looking at DNA replication and the fact that they had CRISPRed the first human embryo in the United States. Oh, lucky us. And there's, I probably have 20 stories looking at some of the insanity that I've found over the last week, but I might save that one for the next show, because I promised you guys we're going to get into 5G today, and I want to dig into a little bit of 5G, and then we'll see where we go from there. Maybe we'll hop into AI, but we were looking at, they had just filmed DNA replication for the very first time, and it wasn't what we expected at all. Oh no, they can't direct the development of life like they thought, because it appears to be on a large scale, quite random. But there was another story that I found. This one I posted maybe a month ago, but hold on, because I moved my tabs. This is pretty interesting. Scientists have witnessed DNA protecting itself from radiation. Now, you know, here's the thing. When I think about some of the experiments they've done exploding bombs in our atmosphere over the last 50, 60, 70 years. I don't know how many years it's been, but it's been a lot. And Hiroshima, Nagasaki, You know, that's how Japan kind of became one of our offshore science labs, because it was a wait and see approach. Don't think that those people haven't been followed very closely to see what kind of mutations formed. And that's something else that they are finding, even when they're doing CRISPR, is that there are a lot of off-target mutations. And actually, another story. Hold on. Don't let me get too off-topic today, because I do that. I thought I was going to cover this one on Thursday, and I never did. But I love the picture on this. It's a deer standing, and he's got a solar panel on his back, and he's got roots growing out of his feet into the ground, and green clover growing out of his horns. And I mean, that's just the thing. It's life is just this big, massive living organism. The planet is all a part of one big organism. We are blood, but cancer cells, and I don't know, birds are red corpuscles or something. But the thing is we screw around with this stuff, as we start manipulating natural laws and processes and secrets of creation, evolution, self-directed evolution. We heard Georgie Porgy Church call, and he's all excited. There's lots and lots of battles going on right now for patents on CRISPR, by the way. I saw, who is the German? Merck. Merck in Germany is now about ready to be awarded a patent for CRISPR. So that's got to make you feel good. Anyway, back to the story. Controversial new theory suggests that life wasn't a fluke of biology. Oh, no, no. It was physics. It all comes down to math, people. I think it's math and music, math and frequency. We talked about some of that in chat yesterday for a Sunday morning before a coffee conversation. Biophysicist Jeremy England made waves in 2013, no pun intended, with a new theory that can cast the origin of life as an inevitable outcome of thermodynamics. His equations suggested that under certain conditions, groups of atoms will naturally restructure themselves so as to burn more and more energy, facilitating the incessant dispersal of energy and the rise of entropy, or the disorder of the universe. England said that this restructuring effect, which he calls dissipation-driven adaption, fosters the growth of complex structures, including living things. The existence of life is no mystery or lucky break, he told Quanta in 2014, but rather follows from a general physical principle and should be as unsurprising as a rock rolling downhill. Since then, England, a 35-year-old associate professor at MIT, has been testing aspects of his idea in computer simulations. Go figure. The two most significant of these studies was published this month, and this was April of 2017. The more striking result was in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences and other physical review letters. The outcomes of both the computer experiments appear to back England's general thesis about dissipation-driven adaption, though the implications for real life remain speculative. This is obviously a pioneering study, says Michael Lessing, a statistic physics and quantitative biologist at the University of Cologne in Germany, said of the PNAS paper written by England and an MIT postdoctorate fellow named Jordan Horowitz. It is, quote, a case study about a given set of rules on a relatively small system. So it may be a bit early to say whether it's generalized, but the obvious interest is to ask what this means for life. Like, are we special or aren't we? The paper strips away the nitty-gritty details of cells and biology and describes a simpler simulated system of chemicals in which it is nonetheless possible for an exceptional structure to spontaneously arise. So, in other words, maybe it is not intelligent design. Gotta tell you, maybe it's just the math behind it, but I swear, when you look at how macro is micro and micro is macro, it just is mind-boggling that this could all just be random. We're just a damn accident. And none of this is real. I mean, I was reading some study yesterday that was talking about how reality really isn't even real. It's just a construct of your brain. And when you die, you break that connection that you have between your outside world and your inside, and so it no longer exists. So does that mean it really doesn't exist and it's just a figment of our imagination? I don't know. But, you know, heaven almost snuffed it a couple times now. Those are questions you got to ask, because I spent my whole life looking into this stuff, and I think I'm way closer to answers now than I was 40 plus years ago. But I got to say, it's still mind-boggling when you think about it. Anyway, this phenomenon that England sees as a driving force behind the origin of life, that doesn't mean that you're guaranteed to acquire structure, he says. The dynamics of the system are too complicated and non-linear to predict what will happen. The simulation involved a soup of 25 chemicals. I think that's just like what we have floating around in space as well. Remember, we all came from the same stardust from cosmic explosions as the macro did. So there is a chance that potentially empty space could be like an ocean with lots of little space bugs and beetles flying around out there. But some of these big structures, like, oh, I don't know, the Big Eyeball Nebula, could be doing things like crying tears they just discovered. Yes, yes, yes. Actually, when I saw that, I almost fell over, because that is always, that Eye Nebula especially, has always been a theory of mine since I was a kid that kind of questioned the taught science. Is that what if in space, because of the immensity of the playground, just like a fish in a very large fish tank versus a fish in a very small fish tank, we are but fish. But what if, because in space, all of this material, all of these elements that make up our bodies that are also floating around freely in space, what if they didn't collect together somehow and form some sort of organism that lived on some sort of intrastellar time frame, because it is so damn expansive, at least for what we can see, where an hour here is a million years for a life form in space. Well, here, let's continue down the mind bend. This was out of IO9 from June 17th. This is 2014. This is a while ago. I must have missed it the first time around. The famous Eye of God Nebula may actually be weeping tears of water. That just kind of floored me. This is one of the most iconic celestial images in astronomy, the eye-like Helix Nebula. Ironically, the incredibly harsh conditions within this dying sun-like star are producing a molecule integral for the formation of water, a process that could be repeated across the cosmos. Planetary nebula consist of an expanding, growing shell of ionized gas ejected from old red giant stars late in their lives. So that would be interesting if at their deaths they produced water, the core of life as we know it. The core becomes a hot white dwarf, pouring out ultraviolet radiation into its surroundings. This radiation can be so intense that it actually destroys molecules that have been thrown out by the star, molecules bound up in the rings of material seen at the outer edges of planetary nebulas. Astronomers surmise that this harsh radiation, ding, restricted the formation of new molecules in that region, but it now appears that this is not only incorrect, so always question what you know, because it's probably just a theory. It may contribute now to the process that generates a molecule responsible for the formation of water, a molecule known as OH+, a positively charged combination of a single oxygen and hydrogen atom. And you know, I've been asking this question for a while. Why haven't scientists, these smarty pants who are CRISPRing, splicing, and dicing every living thing on the planet, figured out how to splice and dice and make water from scratch, take oxygen and hydrogen and go bloop, and there we have it. And I have not found evidence that they've been able to do that yet. They can suck it out of the atmosphere using solar energy. but they haven't been able to splice and dice it and make it in the lab. And I know water itself is a strange molecule. It has some strange traits as far as its weight and that seem to be anomalies. But just makes you wonder. And of course, harsh radiation they thought would kill everything, but it doesn't. It's another thing. I have a friend who has always kind of been a believer in nuclear energy. And I know, it caused many, many hours of fierce arguments. But the one thing that I learned to do out of all those fierce arguments and my appreciation for my friend's understanding of science is that I shut up for once instead of arguing and I listened. It was very hard for me. But it made me see things that I probably would have never have seen using, I don't remember what that's called, but when people shut down, when you try and give them information that is altered to their beliefs and they don't want to see it, I don't even want to see it. Nope, I don't even want to look at it. It's all propaganda. It's all bullshit. Well, I for once didn't do that. And I actually read some studies about life and what they've been seeing in locations like Chernobyl and Bikini Atoll. The weird thing is that wildlife is thriving. Oops, I accidentally hung up on myself. Wildlife is thriving. And so how is this even possible? Because when you think about the 60s and the 70s, probably even the 50s, they're doing all these upper atmosphere tests. And I've talked about this before. I was reading about some of the studies that Kurt Vonnegut's brother was involved in at the University of Albany. And they were working in cahoots with some of the experimentation that was going on as part of the Manhattan Project that was looking at radio propagation. Ding-a-ling. Talk about 5G, a millimeter wave in a minute. Plasma bombing the ionosphere. But they were looking at how that those nuclear particulates were high energy particulates in the upper atmosphere would cause a propagation of radio waves. We found out looking way back to the history of Bell Labs in the early 1900s and their work with the postal office. The post office took over Bell Labs during wartime. Actually made them a part of the federal government for a little while. But they had been helping in the war effort, all in the name of building encryption and doing voice synthesis and being able to send transmissions to things such as submarines at the bottoms of the ocean. We found out that to be able to broadcast radio waves to the bottom of the ocean, you have to be able to do something special to be able to penetrate water, and that is to broadcast in that VLF frequency, the very low frequency, that frequency that we should find that again. I thought I covered a little bit of that. Oh, yeah. We talked about this a while ago, VLF frequencies and how they are changing space. They're finding out is putting another bubble around the planet, this VLF that we are using to communicate with submarines. In some of that paper, that super secret DARPA HARP paper that I read on Thursday, they talked about the frequencies they could broadcast in. And if I'm not mistaken, it included the VLF frequencies. And they even talked about pulsed VLF. Some of those frequencies are the same frequencies that your brain operates upon. Somewhere, and I don't know if it was on my Facebook page or somewhere where I was doing research, I came upon a big experiment that they had done out of HARP way back when, looking at how to, I don't know if it was to beam out messages or manipulate thoughts. But they had actually really 100% done that experiment. And it got people scared. And that was why when it came to DARPA or the Air Force potentially shutting down HARP, nobody really wanted to step up and put money behind the process because they were afraid of the association that it would give them by being associated with some things that had happened there in the past. So I want to find I honestly don't know. I've posted a lot of things over the last week or two. By the way, Dal, thank you very much. You posted for me a couple different times in chat, and I appreciate it. But anyone ever wants to get the real-time feed that I keep, that I do the shows off of, that all feeds out to Twitter. And that is twitter.com/Jule, J-U-L-E, Stan, 1. And that is my live feed that feeds out from Facebook. I post everything onto Facebook just because it's easy. But I don't see that experiment that they did. I came across some pretty insane stuff when I really started digging into the history of that antenna array. So, all right. So the I've Got Nebula is weeping, and radiation does not decimate everything. Oh, no, no. It potentially causes mutations that create things that can't be created manually, like water. All right. So I am lost now. I don't know. I don't know where I was. But here, I moved my tabs from where I had my original marker, and I don't know where that beginning one was. This is where we take aim at CRISPR and start looking at some of the things that you're doing. Hold on. Oh, fuck. I moved my marker because I was skipping all of this CRISPR stuff today, but now I guess I don't actually have to. So here is the story I was looking for. Scientists have witnessed DNA protecting itself from radiation. Go figure. DNA protects itself from damage naturally. It was a project that I remember DARPA gave some funding to Roswell Park Cancer Institute in Buffalo back a few years ago to look at how human cells potentially react to radiation while getting things such as chemotherapy, all in the name of protecting people that had to go in and fight nuclear meltdowns such as Fukushima. DNA protects itself naturally, and scientists are hoping to gain insight into how this process works. When DNA is bathed in ultraviolet light, it can eject a single proton from a hydrogen atom to rid itself of excess energy, ensuring other chemical bonds remain intact. And hey, isn't that the same thing we were just reading about with the how the water is forming in the Eye Nebula? Whoa, that's weird. It's exactly the same process. Well, I guess the process in that Eye Nebula happens to be the same process that our DNA exhibit. Now, how messed up is that? So case in point, I'm going to make my point again, even though it was a weirdo theory back 30, 40 years ago. I think that some of these big structures in space are actually alive. So back to this DNA protecting itself from radiation while making water. This protective mechanism is called an excited state proton transfer, and it is the focus of new research by a team of scientists. And this article was from 4 years later. 3 years later, April 11, 2017, researchers used the LINEAC coherent light source at the SLAC National Accelerator Laboratory to generate X-ray laser pulses capable of probing the nitrogen molecule, which is a simple molecule to thiopriadine, for quadrillionths of a second. The short period of time matters because when molecules are exposed to this kind of light, they react incredibly quickly. And again, it's all about time, whether it be slow time or long time, and the scale of time. Guys, I really, really, really think, though I have no proof of it, but remember, if you can dream it, it's probably somewhere along a timeline, probably possible. I really think that we are just, again, like I said, cancer in this large living organism that might even extend beyond just our planet. Maybe our planet is a red blood cell that carries oxygen and water and things to different parts of the solar system that are then different parts of the body that is then the organism that is called the universe. I don't know. Maybe there's millions of universes all living in some big intergalactic society. Again, put on your tinfoil hat. But I do think about these things. I think that it may be something way surprisingly simple, though that's not very simple. But what's micro is macro. I mean, take a look at an atom. I remember as a kid thinking about this. When I first started learning about chemistry, I really thought chemistry was just so amazing because we had all these chemicals in this table and they were able to not only identify them, but you could identify them by certain characteristics in a laboratory, which were the same characteristics that they were using in space, like spectroscopy or burning and just looking at different light scales. They could tell what elements, and I did take a few college-level astronomy courses and highly recommended. I had a really old guy. You'd think he was on his last legs, but he had been doing this for 50 years, you know, and he knew so much. He was a physicist to start and an engineer and then got into astronomy. And he just had the best way of teaching, like in real simple terms, that even me, as all my engineering guy friends used to call me physics for poets, I was getting my English degree, even I could totally get it, man. And I was like floored over how amazing it was. He taught us all about mini black holes. And that was back when it was still kind of a theory before they had turned on any of these big super colliders that have, I truly believe, destabilized time and space in places where we shouldn't be messing around with this, i.e. Earth. This should be done out in the far reaches of space, if at all. Again, you know, I used to say we are reaching to become gods, but it almost seems like we're reaching to become time lords. You know, look at, I know at one point there was a scientist that came out at CERN that said they were actually tinkering with trying to see if they could use CERN as some sort of time machine. And I'm really wondering, I had an epiphany the other night. You know, there's some weird things that happened to me 20, 25 years ago. And a whole bunch of them, not just one, just a whole bunch, just like people I knew. And if I wouldn't have known them, I wouldn't be here right now in these collages that I did. Someday I'm going to put a link, public link, to all my collages I did right about the same time when I started first having the connections back to now. And I want you guys to look at them. And you might not understand some because you haven't lived my life. But I'm going to tell you, every single one of those collages back at the time, they were just these amazing I don't know, just really deep. It was deep thinking and really colorful and just really made you go, wow, Jewel. But you got to remember, it was back in like the late 80s, early 90s I was doing this stuff. But back at that time, I also knew somebody who then I said I wouldn't talk to for many, 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 many years to come unless I was dying. And who would even know it? But we come back till now. 6+ years ago when I started in radio, you guys remember back at our old hang where we first started doing radio, the person that ran that network, I'd actually known since I was 14. I'd known since the 80s, since the early 80s, as a matter of fact. And long, long story behind all that, but that very person was the reason why I ended up back doing radio for my very first time and now where I am now. So just how strange is that? I had actually had a thought back a few months ago that, what if they actually did, like in this time now, find a way to send something back to another time? Not too far in that distant past, so maybe there could be record of it in the not too distant future. But maybe that's why, like, all these connections for me, honestly, I tend to pinch myself. I think of a lot of things very factually and always want evidence for it, but then I do let my brain go and just be creative for a little bit and take some of the ideas and just maybe put them off kilter 1 or 2 degrees to come up with theories that aren't too out of the realm of possibility. Guys, I'm telling you, you know, if you ever were a fan of Back to the Future as a kid, and you know, like if you made a little change, there'll be changes that end up. There is something that links then to now for me personally, just me. That makes me think that maybe, remember they always taught us that to be able to go back in the past or something, you had to actually make the first entry in the future back to that past. Maybe that's why. Maybe that's why. Even in these collages, I have all these DNA things and weird space things. And I even have in one picture a sculpture of a mother and a baby and a brain with a big blood blot on it. I swear to God, I'm telling you. And in one of them, I even have the banner that I use on YouTube is in one of my collages, guys. It literally is. It's just beyond insane. So, I don't know. When I start thinking micro macro, science, math, wormholes, space, spectroscopy, waves, frequencies, because this is where this is headed, this 5G. And if really this is all connected the way, like in this big, beautiful, colorful symphony that we have that's playing out as a living organism called the universe. And we are tinkering with, like I said in chat the other day, being the off-tune tuba in the orchestra. That off-tune tuba is what causes illness. I think every one of our bodies has its own note. And we were reading about being able to diagnose disease just by the sound of your voice. I think that's very possible because your bodily note is affected by bodily organs and systems, and your bodily note might change detectably or undetectably, except to something like Dr. Smartphone. And it'll change as bodily function changes, as your kidney or liver function changes, as your oxygen levels change. And in the macro system, such as i.e. the universe, if we are causing damage to something like the quote-unquote red blood cell of the universe called Earth, one of those far and few between planets that carries H2O and O2 and all the ingredients necessary for life as we know it around in a symphony called the solar system, and there are many. As we interact with that and we beam out things such as radio and TV waves into space forever and ever. And how long does a photon live? Oh, a photon lives forever. We covered that story as well. It's got to make you wonder if we aren't creating a cancerous section of the universe. There was a story about VLF radio waves back in May. And VLF, like I said, hits some of the frequencies that make up our brain waves. VLF are also what they were using at HAARP to be able to communicate with submarines. But they also found the VLF radio waves are changing space. What? Used for submarines with out-of-this-world side effects, they said in Popular Mechanics. Humanity is changing the near space environment around Earth. Well, how about your brains as well? Because not only outer space, but guess what? Inner space, guys. What's micro is macro. NASA scientists have discovered, and we are not talking about all the space junk orbiting the planet, a type of radio communications known as very low frequencies, or VLF, have been found to interact with particles in space, affecting where and how they move. I was also reading that some of this VLF crap might make us more susceptible to somehow steering in asteroids. Ding-de-ling. Guys, remember they just came up last year with that new space treaty or whatever because they said we had to watch for killer asteroids and they wanted to mine them. Maybe they intentionally made this VLF field to steer in asteroids so they can make bazillions of dollars mining them. I wouldn't put it past them. Occasionally, these interactions create a barrier around Earth against natural high-energy particle radiation in space. But a number of experiments and observations have figured out that, under the right conditions, radio communication signals in the VLF frequency range can in fact affect the properties of high energy radiation environment around the Earth, says Phil Erickson, assistant director for the MIT Haystack Observatory in Westford, Massachusetts. Chances are you don't interact with VLF very often in everyday life, but they're most often used in engineering, scientific, and military endeavors. And these extremely large wavelengths need an extremely large antenna to be used. America's old Wink HAARP program in Alaska was set up to use VLF waves, for example, and while their size makes them impractical to use on a day-to-day basis, VLF waves have also shown certain flexibility. They can travel through water with ease. Remember, your body is made up of 75 to 80% water, and make them the go-to communication wavelength for submarines. And even though such waves are sent through the ocean and your body, they are spread outwards to the extent that the entire Earth has been covered accidentally or on purpose with a VLF bubble. NASA's, get this one, Van Allen radiation probes, meant to study the radiation belts, that was Wernher von Braun why he went to Antarctica, that the conspiracy theorists used to suggest mankind never visited the moon. And I still say the fact that von Braun was working with Disney should give you pause. Back in the late 1960s, the only one that might have been able to fake something like that and had the sound stages and the know-how with special effects would have been Walt Disney and maybe even Kodak. A special film, but remember, Kodak was part of the military-industrial complex as well because they had radiation detectors on the roof here in Rochester and started to find little speckles. And then they called somebody and said, hey, what are you guys doing messing around with radiation? We're getting little speckles on our radiation detectors, and you're screwing up our film. And they said, shh, we're doing secret tests. You're not supposed to know about this, but we will just pull you into the nuclear industrial medical complex. And so they did. Kodak became a part of that whole ugly Manhattan Project story. And guys, it goes way, way deeper. You should dig. Because it goes way, way deeper. And who would ever thunk it? Like, as I dig through all this stuff, I actually had that personal connection with my dad, Wernher von Braun, in Antarctica. And all my life, I heard those stories. And all my life, I had no idea how important they were. But all this ties right back to everything else that's going on. This really is. I have to say that if there ever was a time in human history, it is right now. The shit they're messing with, some of the craziness that they are doing, is sending things to a point where I think they're going to be too screwed up to fix. It's sending it to a point where there are lunatics that now have their foot on the accelerator, and there's a whole bunch of them, like they all got control of the TARDIS guys. And they are steering us to places where we couldn't even imagine. I mean, there's even Jennifer Doudas now out there giving interviews about designer babies and shit. This literally, we're going to have lunatics creating us in their image and turning us into a big cancer that the rest of the intergalactic neighborhood, through natural selection, interstellar white blood cells, are going to have to come take us out, I think. Scientists speculate that the VLF bubble is actually keeping the Van Allen radiation belts at bay. And if there were no human VLF transmissions, then it might be much closer to Earth. And history actually backs this up. Looking at satellite data on the Van Allen belt to the 1960s, ding, when VLF waves were more limited than they are today, they were closer to Earth. The knowledge that mankind has built something that affects space means, hypothetically, a chance for, ding, further modification. They could cleanse our atmosphere of excess radiation, a hazard along the route to mass space travel. And if that gets to be the case, expect VLF wavelengths to become a lot more famous. How frightening is that? And that's with HARP, they said. You know, remember that HARP experiment that WeWink shut down. But we found out that, no, they didn't really shut it down. And I am going to have to do the baby elephant song. I thought to open one more tab and do a search. Don't do it, Jewel. Don't do it. It's always a recipe for disaster. All right. I killed it. Kill this one, too. So what do you guys say to them, apples? I don't know. I went off on a rampage for a few minutes. But it's pretty amazing. So we had read about DNA protecting itself from radiation using the same mechanisms that they had seen at play inside the large I nebula to create water through high levels of ultraviolet. The researchers confirmed that optical light breaks nitrogen-hydrogen bonds, but the X-rays did not. This was important to the researchers that was ultraviolet because they wanted to confirm that any changes they were examining were related to the nitrogen atom or areas immediately surrounding it. And the signature showing that the X-rays had transformed into energy that was confirming resonance effect that they were looking for. And on resonance studies like this one, ding, vibration, allows researchers to clearly see how X-rays interact with samples because they amplify the signals for observation. In future research, the team hopes to gain more insight into the greater class of photochemical reactions using the same approach to study more complex molecules. Knowing more about how molecules of all kinds protect themselves from radiation can help scientists achieve breakthrough treatments for cancer and other diseases that will arise from the breakage and mutation of DNA. And remember, I told you they're working with Roswell Park Cancer Institute. But how interestingly, they're looking at ways to protect molecules and living organisms from cancer, from radiation. Because what? Oh, that conspiracy theorist flight of astronauts outside of our atmosphere maybe didn't happen because we maybe still don't have a way to protect organisms or molecules from radiation damage. Which, you know, I got to tell you, again, that same friend that challenged me about radiation was the one who turned my eyes onto some of the stories about the moon. And to be completely honest, I don't know, call me silly, I had never questioned it, ever. I'd never, ever questioned the moon mission. But now when I look at the history and the whole space race and Sputnik and learn more about DARPA and just how all this works and our big race with Russia, it all totally makes sense. All right, here's another one I had stored up for you on these same lines. This is not a Discover magazine. This is one that I read religiously back in those days that I was having these flashes of what was to come. Creating a universe in the lab. This idea is no joke. Physicists are often reprimanded for using risque humor in their academic writings. But right around the time when I was reading this, back in 1991, that's exactly what happened to cosmologist Andre Lind at Stanford University. He had submitted a draft article entitled, quote, Hard Art of the Universe Creation to the Journal of Nuclear Physics B. And in it, he outlined the possibility of creating a universe in the laboratory, a whole new cosmos that might one day evolve, its own stars, planets, and intelligent life. And again, who would know if they weren't already doing this down a deep, dark hallway in some secret lab? You wouldn't. And who would know if they were doing experiments, messing around with stuff like this at institutions such as things called CERN, that are creating energies that only exist in space. You don't. Near the end of the paper, Lind made a seemingly flippant suggestion that our universe itself might have been knocked together by an alien physicist hacker. Quote unquote. How funny, but now they're actually talking about that, right? They are rich tech billionaires are paying scientists to go out and prove that we are all but living in some sort of crazy simulation, which would explain why all the math would work. The paper's referees objected to this quote-unquote dirty joke. Religious people might be offended that scientists were aiming to steal the feet of the universe, making out of the hands of God, they worried. And Lynn changed the paper's title and the abstract, but held firm that over the line that our universe could have been made by an alien scientist. He says, I am not so sure that this is just a joke, unquote. Bingo. There we go, guys. I'm telling you, I mean, I think somewhere along the way that there is some super intelligence out there. Why would it always come down to math? Why would it come down to things that were just so simple, such as frequencies and being able to move matter between energy? It's quite elaborate, beautiful, and simple. And not for doing the math yourself, but at least when you look at it in colors, it's very like Apple-ish. You know, colors and sound and big happy push buttons that become like the secrets to creation. I don't know. I guess we'll see. One day some of us will know. All of us, actually. Death and taxes. What if you just become a vibration or a note or a tone or a photon? I wish I wouldn't have closed that story. There was a story about how long do photons live. Oh, don't open it. I don't want to search, but let's try. Otherwise, I'm going to sing. How long do... Maybe it'll find a... Oh, will photons ever die? Here we go. It was the sped up version. Science explained, how long can photons live and will they ever die? Well, everything dies, and to many this seems like to be one absolute truth to the universe. Plants and animals rot and decay, stars explode and grow dark, planets crumble or are burned, and even black holes may radiate away. But indeed, our very atoms, which are the same atoms that make up everything else in the universe, decay into lighter elements as time marches on. And let me point out, that is called radioactive decay. So, but what about light? Can it die or will it exist for infinity? Well, in order to understand the answer to this question, you need to understand how atoms work. Fortunately, a previous article, we covered the life of atoms, so head there if you want a more comprehensive discussion on how atoms change. But in short, any time that you have a heavy atom, there is some risk that it will spontaneously start to break down into smaller particles. This is known as ding-a-ling-a-ling radioactive decay. And this is the process that ultimately leads to the demise of atoms. And, you know, even the most radioactive substance in the periodic table will eventually decay to something like lead, which is the lowest form of radioactive decay. But does a similar process work in relation to light? Well, remember, everything works on frequencies. Everything radiates at a certain energy level. Well, ultimately, this question hinges on whether or not photons, which are the carriers of the electromagnetic force, i.e. light, can have mass. Typically, photons are said to have zero mass, and this is a standard solution that is accepted by a majority of scientists. In other words, it is the quote-unquote scientific consensus. However, as always seems to be the case in science, things get tricky when we start adding other variables and thinking about what quote-unquote ifs. So for example, what if a photon did have mass? And I thought somewhere in a story long, long ago in a galaxy far, far away on my old Facebook page that I had a story where they were able to, for one of the very first times ever, turn light into mass. Because I thought to myself, oh, here comes the replicator ad nauseum. I don't know. Maybe that was on my daily dose of WTF. I put that on recently. But it was out there. They were able to turn light into matter. And that seemed to me to be quite a discovery that didn't make the front page news. Hold on one second. We'll do... with hiccups involved. I think, actually, we might have done that in orchestra. And I had a good friend who, his father was our orchestra instructor. And his, growing up, he learned to play every wind instrument that existed. And he had to be good because his dad was the orchestra instructor. And he played in the Disneyland band and was in all these global things. Now he plays on Broadway. He lives in New York City. But one of my favorite instruments that he would play was the oboe. I love oboes. They just have such a sound to them. But there's something about the frequency and the sound of the oboe that just like pushes buttons in my brain. You know, they're already finding that your brain reacts to certain notes and certain frequencies. And they can actually, when we were in chat Friday, I think I did a little research and found that they can actually manipulate, with those optical tweezers, blood cells with frequencies. And they can increase blood flow in certain areas of the brain. And they can bend blood cells with those optical tweezers. I mean, seriously, guys, it's pretty insane what they can do with frequency and light and lasers and things of that nature. Anyway, typically photons are said to have zero mass, but what if a photon did have mass? If a photon did have a non-zero rest mass, that means that it can decay into lighter elements. So a photon would then break down into either some known elementary particle that is lighter, such as a neutrino or an antineutrino. Hey, neutrinos, those things that they're looking for at CERN. Or an as yet undiscovered particle, like the God particle, though I think they did discover that. Notably, the problem with this idea is that according to our current understandings, photons cannot be brought to rest. And I thought that they had disproved that as well, that they had captured a photon. Look that up. Now I'm going to have to again, but I read about that. And as a result, the idea of rest mass does not really apply to them. But for the sake of physics, let's assume that photons do have non-zero rest mass. And thanks to previous experiments, we know what the upper limit of this mass is. So taking this into consideration, how long can photons live? Well, Julian Heck at the Max Planck Institute for Nuclear Physics set out to tackle this issue. And in research that was published in the Physics Review in Letters B, Hank calculated how long photons can live at a minimum. Since photons are moving at such excessive speeds, 186,000 miles per second, time dilation comes into play, ding, time again, and must be accounted for. And once this is taken into consideration, according to the photon frame of reference, Hank found that its lifetime would be a rather short 3 years. However, from our frame of reference, remember, our time frame is different than the time frame of light, 1 minute or 1 second to 186,000 miles per second, light would live about 1 billion billion, that's 10 to the 18 years. Guys, could you imagine? What if we could actually transform into a photon or a frequency and live a billion billion years as a as a non-corporeal form. So all I'm saying is that even though people go, that it's not out of the realm of possibility. It would look a little something like this. 10,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000, 13,800,000 years old. Notice the great disparity in those numbers. Well, this excessive gap means that, for all intents and purposes, the photon lives forever. Dun, dun, dun. Is that not crazy? Guys, I really think that we are being spoofed and fooled. Don't upload yourself to the machine, because maybe it'll be a quantum machine in the future, and you'll be but a fleck of light caught in the digital expanses of living hell that they'll be able to manipulate like a puppet on a string. All right, well, I don't know if we're going to go any further than that. Are we going to get to 5G? Doesn't look like it. That's where we're going to kick it off, I guess. On let's see, I got a doctor's appointment tomorrow morning and an appointment on Wednesday. So not sure what day, maybe Thursday or maybe Wednesday. We'll see how it goes. So I'm not hearing any music, doo-doot, but it's going to be coming in like 30 seconds. So radiation, we find, even comes down to wavelengths of light in our ionosphere, and we are affecting our Van Allen radiation belts, and we have DNA that protects itself against radiation. I also found a study where CAT scans can damage DNA. Interesting. All right, guys, make sure you stick around because it is Monday. Live with Monty Clark, I believe, up next.